A BYD está com ofertas para você levar um elétrico ou híbrido novinho para a sua garagem. Vá a uma concessionária e faça um test drive. BYD, construa seus sonhos.
Olá, boa noite, bem-vindos. Nós brasileiros sabemos amargamente bem como o século XX insiste em assombrar o XXI. Ainda hoje, nosso debate político está aprisionado a fatos ocorridos há quase 60 anos ou mais. Mas não é dos fantasmas brasileiros que vamos falar hoje, mas de lições da história que ainda podem e devem nos servir para enfrentar o presente, que é a única janela para o futuro. Vamos conversar com uma mulher de 93 anos, que mantém a agilidade e flexibilidade mentais e físicas e usa essa saúde para recuperar a saúde de gente como ela. Ela é psicóloga e trata de sobreviventes de grandes traumas, como foi ela, adolescente, ao ser prisioneira, foi feita prisioneira no campo de concentração de Auschwitz. No primeiro dia dela lá, sua mãe foi assassinada ao mesmo tempo em que ela, com 16 anos, tinha que fazer uma apresentação de balé para um dos mais notórios nazistas, o Anjo da Morte, Josef Mengele, que, aliás, morreu no Brasil, conseguiu se esconder aqui. É um privilégio receber a autora dos livros A Bailarina de Auschwitz e A Liberdade é uma Escolha, Edith Eger. Edith Eger. Very honored to have this opportunity, Ahsan Eger.
Thank you, sir. Same here. I see all the books in the back.
Yeah, that's what I do for pleasure and for a living as well. And I also have two special ones. I don't know if you've seen the you've seen the Brazilian editions. You know, in Brazil, your books have different titles. The Choice became The Ballerina of Auschwitz. And the gift became Freedom is a Choice. And it can be puzzling to hear a former Auschwitz prisoner state that freedom is a choice. Is that really so?
I think it's very appropriate because the prison is in our own minds and the key is in your pocket.
But it's not easy to realize that. How did you get to learn this in the most profound way?
Whenever I say anything, I lived it. And I discovered in Auschwitz that the closer I came to the darkness and the hell, the stronger I became with the resilience and perseverance that this is temporary and I can really survive it. And I was able to change hatred to pity and begin to feel sorry for the guards wearing the uniform and telling me that I'm subhuman and I'm never going to get out of here alive. I learned how to respond and not to react.
Why did it take so long for you to write The Choice? Why this urge only came at old age, when you were 87, I think you wrote The Choice, you launched it.
I never really realized that I have anything to say. Many people ask me to start writing, and I would say, I have nothing to say, I have nothing to say, until Philip Zimbardo from Stanford told me that the survivors who made it and famous are all men, and they wanted a female voice. So The Choice is really the female voice of Viktor Frankl. But Viktor Frankl was a medical doctor in Auschwitz in his 30s, and I was a 16-year-old in love. So we were there at different times of our lives.
And it's true that most of the reports of the testimonies about the Holocaust come from male voices. Well, you have you have the exception of Anne Frank's diary.
Yes, but I do. She was telling us that even though I'm looking outside and people are killing each other, I still believe, she said, that people are basically good. And I certainly hope to be the Anne Frank who didn't die. Yes, I think people were not born to hate. They learn it. We are taught to hate. We are not born to hate.
Bertrand Russell said that love is wise and hate is foolish. But we see so much hate in the world nowadays.
Yes, yes, it is.
Have you ever had to deal with resentment, with hurt? Because, I mean, how did you overcome these kind of feelings?
I was angry at God. I shook my fist at God, and I was angry. But then I didn't really have any choice other than to recognize that the anger will not give me any freedom, that I had to really learn that I still can pray for the guards and turn hatred into pity. And I decided with God's help that they will be the prisoners, not me, because I am here not wearing that uniform and not really practice hatred. And I think Auschwitz became a good opportunity for me to look at life from inside out rather than allowing the enemy to take over my thinking, my feeling, and my behavior. So I like to really talk about the love that was necessary in Auschwitz for reach beyond the me, and reach out for each other, because all we had was each other then, and all we have is each other now. So it's wonderful for me to have a dialogue with you. I honor you for where you are, who you are, and the two of us will have a wonderful conversation that I will never forget.
May I call you Eddie, as your friends
please.
Call you?
Please.
We know that music has a healing power. Art is the most sublime expression of human nature. At the same time, there was this monster, the angel of death, Joseph Mengele, asking you to dance to him. What sense do you make that dance for him? What do you make sense of this? What is your interpretation of Mengele's wish to see you dancing?
Yeah, it was very scary for me. And that I remember I closed my eyes and I imagined that the music was Tchaikovsky and I was dancing at the Budapest Opera House and Romeo and Juliet. I checked out. And when I was done, he gave me a piece of bread. And, you know, I had a choice then, as we have a choice now. I could have eaten that bread very quickly. But then, thank God, I chose to climb up on the third shelf and I shared the bread with the girls that I was with. And then these were the girls when I was on a death march going from Mauthausen to Gunskirchen, Austria, when I was about to be shot. And when you were shot, you were thrown into a gutter. I revisited that place. And by the way, the girls that I shared the bread with, they came and they carried me so I wouldn't die. Isn't that amazing that the worst can bring out the best in us?
As irmãs Edith e Magda passaram 8 meses em Auschwitz. Depois, à medida que os alemães sofriam derrotas na guerra, elas foram enviadas junto a outros prisioneiros aos campos de Mauthausen e Gunskirchen. Nesse último, elas foram finalmente resgatadas, libertadas, no dia 4 de maio de 1945, por soldados americanos, mais especificamente por homens da 71ª Infantaria do Exército dos Estados Unidos. Eddie, what was your weight when the 71st Infantry found you?
I don't know, because I was among the dead. They tell me 40 pounds. I don't think so. but I would say 70 for sure. I was really just full of bones, and all of a sudden I felt someone touching my hand, and I looked up, and it was one of the members of the 71st Infantry. A few years ago, I was called by a general from Colorado and asked me to come and lecture on PTSD. And when I arrived, I saw nothing but 71 everywhere. And I realized that it's the home of the 71st Infantry. Isn't it wonderful? And I told them that without that uniform, I wouldn't be here today. And you can imagine the relationship that I have developed with these young people who were
very moving.
Yes,
very moving.
Yes.
And
I am in touch now with that wonderful survivor. And he said that we're going to meet hopefully soon to give each other a hug. And I kept telling him for showing up for me and found me among the dead.
Nos Estados Unidos, depois de um começo de vida muito difícil, como qualquer imigrante, Edith Eger decidiu voltar a estudar. Aos 40 anos, formou-se psicóloga e hoje é doutora em psicologia na Universidade do Texas, onde trabalha com veteranos de guerra e vítimas de trauma físico e emocional. Well, Eddie, man's evil is such a disturbing mystery. We've been speaking about Mengele's wanting to see you dance. You had Albert Speer, even Hermann Göring. They had fine developed sense of aesthetics, of art, and they were monsters. They were capable of atrocities. How do you explain that?
I think they were very precious children. And if I would have lived in Germany and someone would tell me, as Hitler did, that we're going to take over the world, and this is exactly what happened. The beautiful children were brainwashed. That's how I began to work with battered wives many years ago who were beaten by their husband and they left. And I helped to build a center, a transitional living center for battered wives. And then they went back to the husband because he brainwashes her that she's nothing without him. You have to be taught to hate. And yes, there is evil in the world. I am going to be very happy when I'm going to be on my deathbed, not asking what the world has given me, but in what way I could come and travel all over the world and let people know that love can conquer all.
Eddie, why do you say that to survive is just the beginning and not necessarily the hardest part?
I think you get so used to being a prisoner. So when we were liberated, people would go through the gate. I couldn't walk. I was just observing things. And then pretty soon, they would come back and sit down because we didn't know what to do with freedom. Dr. Seligman would be the one who really created the positive psychology and see, is it possible to find a gift even in the most darkest situation? And I can tell you that I look at Auschwitz as an opportunity, as I do the COVID-19 too, as an opportunity to see how we respond rather than react and stop complaining and maybe write a book and go to your library, and maybe you pick a book that you have time to read and find something that you're for rather than against. It's an opportunity.
Yeah. As a psychologist, yes, you help many people with PTSD, yes, And what's the first question you pose to them when they arrive?
I never say, how are you? I'm not Humpty Dumpty. I'm not putting you back together. But I do ask, how can I be useful to you? How can I be useful? I'm not you there, but hopefully that you and I can have a conversation when you begin to find everything in life as an opportunity for an opportunity of discovery, not recovery, to discover your inner resources and not to depend on someone else to come and liberate you or make you free, that you take charge of your thinking, because what you think, you create. So think about your thinking. Yes.
Did you ever faced a case that had no solution, helpless?
I never lost a patient. I had a woman who ate too much. Every time she was angry, she kept eating and eating 150 pounds. And one night, she was writing a letter how she's going to die, and kind of like Anna Karenina, kind of a letter that her husband doesn't have to worry about her anymore and that kind of. So I went over to her house and I said, when I am with you, I'm going to tell you something in Hungarian. And when your husband comes home, instead of you coming and writing a letter, you're going to give something. Hungarians are very good in how to cuss. So I taught her how to cuss in Hungarian. Anything I reach for, anything. And she lost 150 pounds and she became a social worker and she went back to school. So no, I never give up, ever, ever, ever.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a beautiful story. Listen, apart and beyond war experiences, what are the most common situations in regular life that produce PTSD, mm-hmm. post-traumatic stress disorder?
It's not a disorder. It's a reaction to a loss. It's about grief. And grief is not an illness. You cannot heal what you don't feel. So with me, you take a journey. You take a journey of grieving, feeling, and healing. You cannot heal what you don't feel. So it's a journey, really, truly, from the prison of your own mind. And you're the one who can do that work, that you go inside you and find the part in you that is capable of not revolving, but evolving. Kind of like a butterfly. You have to let go of the chrysalis so you can fly freely like a butterfly.
Eddie, last year, Bill Gates recommended your book as
yes.
a must-read
yes.
during the pandemic.
Yes. Yes.
What would you point out to be similarities between war and the pandemic?
Well, war is awful. What we're experiencing now is a time when people must face reality that January 6th, the Capitol was attacked. And the shirt that I saw, 6 million was not enough. So history has a tendency to repeat itself. George Santayana said that to us. I think it's very, very important for not to deny that hate, unfortunately, is conquering. And I will do anything in my power to let people know not what happened and not what is happening now. It's what we do with it. And I do everything in my power to see to it that no one will ever, ever experience what I did.
But I wonder how one can cope and deal with the fact that you're mm-hmm. kind of obliged not to forget,
no.
but something that is unbearable to remember. How to deal with this paradox?
I think it's very important, perhaps, to recognize that life is just one day. One day, that morning sunshine will go away, and it's important the way to get up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, I love me, because self-love is self-care. It's not narcissistic. And of course, I do that, and then I see, how can I live today as one day? And I think this whole COVID-19, it's a time-out period to regroup and redecide and not to give in and not to give up, because it's easier to die than to live. I experienced that people would touch the guards and they got shot right away. They touched the barbed wires and they were electrocuted. I think Auschwitz was an opportunity, as this is now, to see how to respond rather than react, because the enemy would put me in a gas chamber any minute. I didn't know whether I took a shower, whether I'm going to get gas or water coming out of the water. So it was very important to remember that it's easier to die than to live.
I hear you're very fit, not only mentally, but physically as well. Are you? Do you still dance?
Well, I am always dancing. Even in Auschwitz, they could not control me at night. I was already dancing, and I was in Budapest, and I was everywhere. I'm still dancing. I think dancing is the most beautiful way that you can use your body. And I still can do the high kick. If you want me to do the high kick, I'll do it for you.
I would love to see
you
that.
You can do it with me.
Okay, let's go.
You want to do
let's
it
do
now?
Let's do it now.
Okay.
That's like I want. Okay.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Very good. Very good.
Very good.
Eddie, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're such an inspiration for us. Thank you for your books,
thank you.
Your words, for your life.
Thank you.
Take good care of yourself.
Thank you. Remember, you are a role model to your children, the way you treat their mother. So tell your wife that I'm going to bring you breakfast in bed every Sunday morning, and then that the children can see you as a wonderful, wonderful mensch.
That's a deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Congratulations, and thank you very much for doing the high kick with
thank
me.
Thank you.
Keep dancing.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Essa foi a história e o exemplo de vida de Edith Eger, autora dos livros A Bailarina de Auschwitz e A Liberdade é uma Escolha. Toda essa história ainda está muito próxima, perigosamente próxima, não podemos esquecer. Até a próxima.
Gostou da conversa? No Globoplay você pode acompanhar e também ver as imagens de tudo que rolou. Até lá.